Welcome to the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Sunra, and joining me is my co-host, Brad Harbin. How you doing, Brad?
Hey, what's up, Kyle? It's good to see you and hear your voice again. It's been a little while, but man, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Yeah, you went on last week, but I think we were able to carry on and do a decent episode without you. But yeah, definitely appreciate having you on to talk more. I'm sure the listeners appreciate it too, not just having to hear my voice.
Oh no, I'm excited. Definitely need some help. Kind of just sitting middle of the road in a few leagues, so I'll definitely bounce a few things off you here in a little while. Or obviously, if the listeners want to send anything to us, I'll be putting stuff out on my Twitter handle. Trying to make some decisions, trying to get the team better. Just chipping away.
Yeah, that Twitter handle is @therundown_BH. But yeah, we'll try and post everything on the Full Press Fantasy Pod Twitter account @FPC_FantasyPod. We'll have not just this episode, access to Brad and I's rankings, right, my goal line guide article that I write every week. But then we'll also do a poll for our biggest differences in our rankings. And we'll get to that. Well, all the big differences in players, but one player in particular that we're going to make the topic of the poll this week. We'll get to that a little later. But you know, you're talking about making moves, Brad. That's apparently a bunch of NFL teams thought the same thing. And the NFL trade deadline has come and gone, and pretty active trade deadline. This seemed like an NHL or NBA trade deadline, not an NFL deadline baseball, that are usually pretty quiet.
Yeah. Yeah. It was something else to try and keep track of on Tuesday for sure. Definitely.
Yeah. So we'll just, there were quite a lot of trades made. We're going to focus on the offensive skill players, the fantasy relevant players. So let's just get into it. And we'll start with the NFC North trade, the rare interdivisional trade. Not that it never happens, but we do hear those rarely happen, but it happened here. So the Detroit Lions gave up TJ Hawkinson to the Minnesota Vikings. And so this is the exact these are the exact picks that were sent. So the Lions get a 23 second and a 24 third. Now, the Vikings, they get Hawkinson as well as 2/4, one this year and one in 23 and then one in 24. So, the upcoming draft and the draft after that. So, basically, the cost of getting Hawkinson was basically moved down from the second to the fourth and the third from the fourth in each of the next two draft classes. So, we'll see how good the Vikings are next year and how bad the Lions are. Maybe those third and fourth in 2024 aren't so different, but we're going to focus on what is the effect on each of these teams. So let's start with the Lions. Okay. Obviously, losing Hawkinson, the immediate replacements at tight end would be Brock Wright and I believe his name is Jordan Mitchell. I've seen a lot of them go in waiver leagues, waiver bids in leagues. I still think the biggest beneficiaries are just going to be the wide receivers in general, like more targets. I mean, I think Amon-Ra St. Brown kind of established himself as the number one player on this team, regardless of who else is there in terms of pass catchers. So Amon-Ra and Swift, I'd imagine, are the top two targets on the team, which I think for Swift, you know, he was maybe competing with Hawkinson for that number two, number three spot. And then it kind of just moves all the other receivers up. So I'm looking at Josh Reynolds and Khalif Raymond. I think those would be the bigger beneficiaries than, say, Brock Wright, because while we've seen Hawkinson do well, we've also seen games where he hasn't gotten a ton of targets, and Hawkinson with the Lions has been very boom or bust. Like, he's been the tight end one overall, I think, at least once this year, pretty sure twice last year. Like, he's had weeks where this guy's unstoppable, but then other weeks where he
just disappears. Yeah.
So, I think Brock Wright seems to be the favorite to be the starter for the Lions, but I mean, if you wanted him, you would have had to pick him up already, because I guess I've seen him on a bunch of waiver ad bids and things like that. So, not someone I was totally excited about picking up. I need to see it first, the tight ends. Can they generate targets? I'm not just going to, this guy's the starting tight end, I'm automatically going to go for him. That's just kind of my philosophy.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm not interested in, trying to grab one of those tight ends. I do think an addition of a Josh Reynolds would be interesting. I know the backfield seems like they're. I mean, Jamal Williams is he's having a heck of a year for the backup running back. But I think Swift might get an extra target here or there as well. But yeah, I'm not interested in the tight ends either. So I definitely tend to agree with you on that.
I think for Jared Goff, I mean, yeah, he's losing a big weapon, so I don't think it helps, but I don't know that it necessarily hurts so much. I think with Goff this year, one thing that I'm going to be really conscious of with the rankings going forward is his home road splits are very different. This feels like Ben Roethlisberger a couple of years ago. You never wanted to play him on the road and always play him at home. I kind of get the sense that's what it's going to be like with Goff. So if he's at home, he's top 15. If he's on the road, maybe he's around 20. Like that seems like it's going to be the case. So pay more attention to that than I think like with the weapons he has. Obviously, if he loses, well, I think Swift might not play this week again. Like it seems like his injuries, he's back in the lineup, back out. But losing Swift would be detrimental. If you lost Amon-Ra, that would probably be the thing that hurts Goff the most, because that seems like that's his true number one target. So
definitely,
I don't think huge detriment to Goff, but obviously it doesn't help.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, totally agree. I mean, you're definitely right on with the home and away splits. I mean, Goff's going to be a candidate for the Thanksgiving Turkey Day leg or whatever they give away with. Not that the Lions ever actually win that game, but he's definitely been putting up the points at home. I don't know if it's the indoors or what it is, but I don't really see too much of a impact for this trade like you. I mean, I completely agree with that. We just got to pay attention to the home and away as far as we're concerned, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, and to your point about the Lions not winning the Thanksgiving game much, to be fair, they don't really win mini games anyway, so it's not like it's Thanksgiving or not.
I was trying to be nice.
Currently a one-win team. However, they will play the Packers this week, so maybe that's the type of doormat team that they need to play in order to get on the winning track. Packers just suck right now. I'm kidding. I'm actually a little more optimistic after that Bills game. Listen to the full press Packers pod if you want to get Jesse and I's thoughts on that. But we'll move away from the NFC North. Oh, wait, no, we're not. Next trade is with the NFC North as well. Oh, wait, the Vikings. We should talk about the effect that the Vikings have. But we'll get to that next trade in a sec. But Minnesota just can't escape them. You see, as a Packers fan, again, you've heard this on the full press Packers pod, that horn annoys me. Every first down. So I want to ignore the Vikings if I can. But no, they're doing well this year. And clearly, a team, one loss is the opposite of the Lions, who have one win. The Vikings have one loss. So they're clearly going for it. Hockenson kind of fills a need because Irv Smith suffered a high ankle sprain.
Right.
It looks like he might be out for the year, which sometimes those high ankle sprains can be really significant. This seems like a pretty severe one. And he's, last year missed the entire season with was an ACL or an Achilles injury. I can't even remember. But so Irv Smith, a little recent injury. It's funny. Those two were the same draft class, Hockenson and Irv Smith. So they would both still have, I believe, 1 year left on their rookie contracts. So interesting to see how that goes. Or no, I guess this is the last year of their rookie contract. So interesting to see what the Vikings will do in the future. But for right now, I mean, Jefferson's obviously the alpha on that team pass catching wise. Cook has not caught a lot of passes. So it really does come down to, is Hockenson the number two target or is it Adam Thielen? It seems like it's similar to what he was dealing with the Lions. So I don't know that it's necessarily his role is going to change. Probably as a better quarterback. Better touchdown percentage chance. I think he had 3 touchdowns this year, so he might have more than 3 the rest of the season with what I think we'd agree is a better quarterback than Kirk Cousins. So I'd say slight upgrade for Hockenson, but with the way the tight ends have been this year, it's not like you had that much room to go up. He's already probably top 5 anyway for the rest of season rankings, so not too much room to go up, but I would imagine it's a good move for him. I think this helps Cousins, obviously. Don't love it for KJ Osborne or maybe even Adam Thielen to a certain extent, and Jefferson, this shouldn't have an effect on him. So and Dalvin Cook's not catching passes anyway, so he should still be doing what he's doing this year anyway. So
exactly. Yeah, and I think Hockenson really gives them a different a little bit more of a wrinkle in the offense with his ability to really get downfield. It seemed like Irv Smith kind of operated on the underneath, which I mean Hockenson is a big target for as well, but Hockenson had a couple, two or three nice catches and runs for the Lions earlier this season. So I definitely like the upgrade for Cousins. Certainly, like you, don't really see much happening with Jefferson. Maybe a slight regression for for Thielen and Osborne, as you mentioned. But I think for Cousins, I mean, I can certainly see where he could, you know, certainly move up as the year progresses.
Yeah, for sure. One more weapon. And I mean, absolutely, it's, you know, you kind of basically say he just replaces Irv Smith to what he's been doing. But I mean, he was a first round pick that year, whereas Smith went, I think, in the second round. So clearly the Lions felt like he was a much better tight end than Irv Smith, to the point where there was such a draft difference. So you're probably upgrading on Irv Smith, if anything. So, yeah. So we're moving from this NFC North trade to, I guess, two more North teams. So the Chicago Bears and Pittsburgh Steelers made a trade. And it's funny, another second round pick next year move for a pass catcher. A little simpler, not five pieces move. This is simply the Chicago Bears getting Chase Claypool, the Pittsburgh Steelers getting the Bears 2023 second round pick. So starting with the Bears, I guess the question here is Claypool the number one receiver on the team, or is he going to be behind Darnell Mooney? Because, and as number two, and just the lack of talent on that Bears pass catcher group, it's hard to imagine him any lower than the number two target, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's I think he comes in as the two with the possibility of taking over, you know, maybe towards the end of the season. But I mean, Mooney and Fields, I mean, last couple of weeks, they've seemed like they've had a little bit of chemistry, but, you know, kind of bring Claypool in there, I think a new scenery will do him well. I'm sure Akili has, you know, some positive thoughts about that, with the exception of, is he a Steelers fan? I can't remember. Or is that?
Yeah, you called it right. I actually haven't talked to him about it yet, but I'd imagine he's pretty happy getting this second round pick, especially from the Bears. Yeah. That looks like that could be early.
Yeah, I thought that was a little rich, personally. I mean, with you know, Claypool's you know, recent, you know, last couple of years. I mean, nothing you know, too eye opening. But, you know, change of scenery, going there. Fields certainly seems like he's trying to get his feet underneath them. Seems to be the talk of the of that draft class right now, with Lawrence struggling and Wilson struggling as well. Of course, Lance on the mend, and Mac Jones not doing much. So I mean, I still think Mooney, you know, kind of leads it early on, but Claypool, you know, he has the talent. We've seen it before. He has a skill set to really, you know, kind of take over that wide receiver room, which really shouldn't be a problem. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, like I said, I think he comes in and is immediately a starter for them. I don't really see many people on that team that prevent him from getting targets. So I think it's for Claypool. I mean, I think Justin Fields is a better quarterback than Kenny Pickett, so I'll say that's an upgrade in that sense. You know, and just even just like for this year, you know, Fields, he's further along, he's in his second year, and it seems like he started the season really poorly and now has kind of gotten better. Yes, for Fields, getting another weapon, that's what we're saying. He needs help. So certainly I think this helps Fields. But honestly, the biggest beneficiary of all this might be Darnell Mooney. Because the problem with him is he's been drawing so much attention from opposing defenses because he's the only guy. That's what made him appealing. Oh, he's going to get 150, 160 targets because he's the only guy there. But defenses know that, and they've really concentrated, it seems, coverage. I go back to the Packers game. Mooney had one catch for minus 4 yards. Like, they bottled him up. There was someone on him every play, and they tried to kind of double him. And, you know, him playing from the slot over the middle, they could kind of do that with the safety. So it really seemed like they just – game plan coverage is just stop Mooney. Now teams kind of can't with Claypool. So I think this opens things up for Mooney more. So I think he might be the biggest beneficiary of this entire trade.
I was going to say, from a fantasy aspect, is that someone someone should be looking after, you think?
I've got one league where I might consider trying to buy Mooney. You know, got picks looking for receivers. He might be a type of receiver I would like to go buy. So yeah, I think Mooney might be... So far from this, like we've talked about the Lions, Vikings, and Bears, the biggest winner of any of those three teams right now, I think, is probably Mooney, and maybe the biggest winner of any player we talk about on this. So again, that's my thinking, is Claypool is there to open things up for Mooney more than draw targets away from Mooney. Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe Claypool comes in and he's instantly the number one. It seems like with Mooney, he can get open pretty easily, and with Claypool, it seems like the Steelers really had to manufacture his touches. High touchdown upside. They were giving him a lot of, you know, carries around the goal line. And you know, that might help Fields throwing touchdowns near the red zone as well. But I still view Mooney as the number one receiver on this team.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, and like I mentioned at the top of the pod here is, I mean, this is the kind of stuff I need to hear. I mean, like, going to buy Mooney never really crossed my mind. I'm like focused on other guys. So, but now, you know, kind of talking this out, I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. So yeah, right on.
Well, thanks. Hope we can help. And for the Steelers, I mean, losing Claypool means it, you know, their other receivers will need to step up. It seems like his whole career, he was behind Deontay. Deontay's still drawing targets. The only two games Deontay hasn't gotten like 8-9 targets was the two games where the quarterback switches were made, when Pickett got his first action when they benched Trubisky, and then the game where Pickett got hurt and they had to bring Trubisky in. It seems like with those situations, out of rhythm, it seems like, I wonder with Johnson, is that something where you just see him open so much that the more the game goes on, the more he gets targets? It seems like he tends to get a lot of targets late in the game. Is that something where the quarterback just sees that he's constantly open and eventually, I have to throw him the ball? Right. At the start of the game, when you're kind of just first coming in, maybe that's not so obvious, because it seems like the only two games where he's really struggled, it's not even who the quarterback is. It's just because there was a quarterback switch, it got him out of rhythm completely. So I think at this point, it doesn't even matter for Deontay if it's Pickett or Trubisky. You just want whoever is starter to finish the game. It seems like that's the best thing for Deontay. So that, I don't see much effect. He's drawn tons of targets regardless of Claypool being there. The bigger effects, maybe Freiermuth's still been drawing a ton of targets. So yes, maybe just, you know, maybe he's close to Hockenson. Like, he maybe gets a bit of a bigger boost and kind of match where Hockenson is, just because it opens up so much targets for him. I know Pickens took a zero last week, so maybe not so, you know, we've seen Pickens have a good, you know, make some really interesting catches and right, some great catches and some athletic plays. So I don't know that his ceiling increases. Maybe this just helps his floor. Like, he's not going to have games where he gets zero, because they just don't have enough players to ignore him completely like that.
Yeah, you know, that's certainly a good point. More opportunities for the rookie to, you know, see what he can do.
So we'll travel back a little bit. This technically wasn't a deadline trade. I mean, close, right? It happened during the weekend. I guess this happened Saturday or Friday. The Chiefs on bye week, so they can kind of do this and not have a trade and have to play the next day. Like, they knew they had the whole week off. But the Chiefs traded for Kadarius Toney. And I know the Giants, it seemed like, basically since Brian Daboll took over, it seems like they've been trying to trade Toney. So
yeah,
the former first round pick didn't net them the heck. It didn't even net them what the Steelers got from Claypool. The Giants got a 2023 third and a 2023 sixth from the Chiefs, which we all expect those to be towards the end of the draft, and maybe the last pick of each round. So the Chiefs getting Toney.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I certainly saw enough of him in college, and he was certainly dynamic. Hasn't really necessarily transferred to the NFL, except for maybe one game against the Cowboys last year. Look, I mean, the Chiefs game this week, I want to say it's a Monday night or Sunday night against the Titans.
Yeah, I'm Sunday night.
Yeah, I'm interested to see, you know, what goes on there. You know, how they utilize him, because he certainly has the elusiveness and just the quickness of someone who could certainly flourish in a Pat Mahomes offense. You know, getting the ball quick, but I'm worried about his mental, you know, picking up the offense middle of the season. And he does like to sulk if he's not getting the ball. I mean, I think that was one of the complaints with the Giants, one of the many complaints with the Giants, that just, you know, not necessarily, you know, giving it all. But he could be a beneficiary again of a new atmosphere. Obviously, being somewhere that maybe he feels like he's wanted. I know a lot of people felt like the Giants reached for him in the draft, but he's definitely going to be a player I'm going to be watching during that game against the Titans this week, just to kind of see his body language, see how they, you know, use him, you know, what kind of packages there are. Cause I mean, so I guess they picked him up and then they were on the bye.
Were able to kind of get, I don't know if they got in much practice last week, but they've been able to kind of practice with him.
Sure. Yeah.
Cause it sounds like they're saying he's going to be healthy. Like, right, whereas the Giants have been, you know, holding him out with injury, it seems like he's healthy enough.
They wanted to trade him.
Well, we see that a lot, right? You're right. Yeah. Like, especially when you're coming up to a trade, right, you know, players, you hold the player out so they don't get hurt. Because if they get hurt, you can't trade them anymore, right? It seems like maybe the last couple weeks it's been that. But also, I mean, frankly, Tony's been dealing with tons of injuries. He didn't start week one his rookie year. He came in, exploded for a huge game and then got hurt the next week. And then suddenly, you know, it's kind of.
He definitely has that stigma on him. Yes.
And so, yeah, I mean, I don't want to say the Giants have completely like that they faked the injury or anything. I think he was hurt at some point and maybe he felt he was good to go and they thought he wasn't fully recovered yet, or they just didn't want him anyway. So they kind of use whatever excuse, whatever it seems like. To your point, it seems the Chiefs obviously traded for him, so want him now, not first round pick, but I agree with you. I think it'll be really tough for him to just pick it up and right away insert himself into this offense. Sky Moore, this a rookie that they took in the second round this year, we all thought was a great pick. I know a lot of people thought he was actually kind of a steal at the end of the second. I kind of wanted the Packers to take him in at the start of the second instead of Christian Watson, but that's another story. I also wanted the Packers to take George Pickens, as we talked about players we just talked about. But to me, Sky Moore has struggled to get into this offense. So, I mean, Sky Moore is a rookie, Tony in his second year, but not so much experience and no experience in this offense. I view Sky Moore and Tony as they're there as interesting options. It's more about next year more than anything. They'll be, I think Juju will be, this is the last year of his contract. I'm pretty sure this is the last year of Mecole Hardman's rookie contract. To me, those two are still the top two receivers on the team. And those are going to be the two, I think, that are the priority to get involved. And even then, like, Valdes-Scantling's still playing ahead of Sky Moore, so I don't see Tony necessarily passing him up. And there are games when Valdes-Scantling puts up zeros. So I want Kelsey. I want Juju. I kind of want Hardman now because it seems like he's shown something in his last few weeks. I don't really want to start any other Chiefs receiver. So Tony, I think, maybe a good dynasty buy. But from a redraft perspective, I don't expect much from him this year, to be honest.
Yeah, not even a stash. Yeah, I don't know if I can do that either.
I'd rather stash Sky Moore. He's been there longer. And first rounder Tony over second rounder Sky Moore. But as you said, Brad, no one thought Tony should have gone in the first round except probably Gettleman, who took him and then was immediately fired after. So you talk about, like, the team didn't want him. The only person that wanted him in the organization was gone almost immediately after taking him. So,
well, trust me, I have a feeling Urban Meyer would have taken him too if he would have fallen.
Oh, that's true. No, that's right. That was the rumor. And then they ended up with Etienne.
So there you go.
Yeah. So, again, probably shouldn't have been a first rounder. So we can kind of view him and Sky Moore as the same prospects. I'd rather still stash Sky Moore. Maybe them trading for Tony says, okay, we thought Sky Moore was going to be further along than this. So maybe it's a detriment to Sky Moore. I don't really want either, to be honest.
Yeah.
For the Giants, I mean, wasn't getting many targets. I don't know how this affects it. Wandale Robinson, Darius Slayton. Those are the only two. Well, I mean, you want Barkley, obviously, but I was going to say, those are the only two pass catchers. It seems like you really want the tight end. Bellinger was coming along, but now he's on IR. So I know Tanner Hudson, I think, would be the starting tight end. I'm not so excited about him. I still think Daniel Jones, like, this doesn't affect him too much because with Jones, it's the rushing ability, right? Like the rushing ability to get to augment his floor. Although last week, he didn't really run at all. So maybe this is a bad week to talk about, but coming off the bye week, maybe, you know, dealing with that ankle injury, maybe he's going to be fully healthy. So I don't really see too much of an effect on Daniel Jones or the Giants offense in general. Seems like maybe it'll just be a happier locker room without him, whether that's just the coaches or players, but
yeah, that's pretty much what it's going to be. I think get him out of there. He seemed like he didn't want to be there. So yeah, I think all parties win there.
All right. So let's talk about running backs now. Buffalo Bills, and it seems like they've been trying to make moves all year, really, into the offseason free agency. There was they signed a restricted free agent J.D. McKissic, I guess he was unrestricted free agent. It seems like they'd made an offer. He was planning to sign, and then 11th hour kind of showed the offer to Washington, and they upped it and gave him more. So there was rumors they wanted Christian McCaffrey, but just weren't willing to give up the price. Seems like they're, what the 49ers gave up, right? A second, a third, a fourth, and a fifth next year, I believe. So I think they didn't want to invest too heavily in that in a running back. They feel like, we've got a good team. We could win. We're among the best teams in the league. We're not a running back away from competing. We're already competing. Maybe McCaffrey puts them over the edge, but also, it's Josh Allen. How much does that really increase Josh Allen's value? So they instead decided, can we ship off a running back in a third to get an upgrade? This is very much a dynasty move, like, to be honest, when you're trying to tear up at running back. Okay, sell off another running back, consolidate, and get a third. Or from the opposite perspective, get draft picks by selling away a player, getting a pick and another running back. So from both teams' perspective, this made sense. The exact trade is the Buffalo Bills get Nyheim Hines from the Indianapolis Colts, and they ship off to the Colts Zach Moss in a 2023 third. Very much a dynasty trade. Like, you could see this exact trade happen in a dynasty league. Hines getting traded for Moss in a third. Actually, maybe that'd be funny. Leagues I have Zach Moss, I'm going to try that. I'll try and sell a third to see if I can get Hines. Hey, it was good enough for the NFL. It should be good enough for a dynasty league. Problem is, I don't have Moss very many places. The FPC, that might be the only league, and I think you might have my third there, Brad. So, I guess I can't make that trade happen. Oh, well, I tried. But I mean, the Bills and Colts made it happen. So from the Bills perspective, it seems like, you know, Singletary's been the pass catcher. Well, actually, it's weird. It's weird how the Bills have split the duties this year. It hasn't even been you're this role, you're this role. It's okay. So every running back they have can fill all the roles, which is really smart. That's kind of how you should, because it keeps the defense guessing. Is this a run play? Is this a pass play? When Singletary's out there, you don't know for sure. When James Cook's out there, you don't know for sure. To a certain extent, with Nyheim Hines, you can do that too. The Colts have loved to run him up the middle a lot more than we'd expect them to, as a way to kind of play against those tendencies. So Hines provides that. The split was really nice because it seemed obvious. If it was a close game, Singletary was in. If it was a blowout, Singletary was on the bench, and then it was the other guys coming in. And well, I guess Zach Moss has just kind of remained on the bench in recent weeks. Right. Now that we know that they tried to trade him, that actually makes sense more than, because the start of the year wasn't the case. He was getting out there a lot more than Cook even. Cook's first touch was a fumble, so that probably, okay, no, stay on the bench for now. Cook seems like he's more established himself, so you know, he was good. He was playing ahead of Moss, but now I don't know that Cook necessarily plays ahead of Hines. I'd imagine Singletary's still the guy for them, but maybe not. Yeah. Like, maybe Hines comes in. Like, I'm still going to play Singletary this week. Got him in enough spots. I don't know that I would love to play Hines this week necessarily. First week with the offense, I think I'd like to wait and see, but he's someone who I think could really emerge. And as you know, how much that team loves to pass could be good for him. I think it's definitely an upgrade for Hines just in terms of what offense he's in. Not having to play behind Jonathan Taylor. Like, this is, you know, I like Singletary, but this is someone he could emerge from and get more snaps then. So sure. I do like this for Hines. It's a big win. Still don't think it's a huge loss for Singletary until we see how they're going to split things. So, like, I guess this isn't a great week to play Singletary anyway, because they're playing the Jets. I think we all expect it to be a blowout. So, and I still had him in the top 24 around, I might have him at 25. But I was higher on Cook this week than I have been in recent weeks just because of that. So I think status quo on that for now. And maybe, you know, maybe it's close games. It's Hines and Singletary split. So maybe this the most, I don't know. What do you think? I guess this is maybe the one situation where I don't really know how it's going to play out, because it's been very specific how they've done things up to this point in terms of close games and blowouts, as opposed to this running back in this role. So it's tough to know how the Bills are going to approach this. Do they view Hines as better than Cook right now? Do they view him even as better than Singletary right now?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I like what Buffalo did here, and you're comparison as far as, you know, trying to get backs that can all, you know, kind of do the same thing. In my former life, I was a restaurant manager, and one of my goals, which was a different philosophy from many other managers, was to try and teach the employees stuff that I do so they can be a little bit of a jack of all trades. So I can trust them in certain roles. And I guess that kind of is a analogy to what the Bills are doing at running back here. I like this for Hines. I mean, I think he's very talented. I like him coming out of college. I know you like him as well, just from, you know, doing the show with you and everything. I'm going to sit back with some binoculars here, kind of see what's going to go on, see if they're going to, you know, continue to have that same progression with, you know, Singletary in there, you know, that you trust him in a tight game, but then, you know, kind of backing out when you start blowing them out, which the Bills tend to have things happen. But I think, this is a great situation for Hines. I think he can go in there and compete. I think he's going to be able to get more touches, showcase. I think he is going to be active in the special teams as well. I mean, he could use him in a return role as well. I mean, he certainly has experience with that.
Yeah, he's done that with the Colts before. Yeah, that's right.
I'm gonna hands off at least for a week, maybe two, kind of see what see how things go out. But yeah, I mean, I think Singletary could take a hit here. He was somebody I was targeting before this happened, but now I'm I'm going to stay away a little bit.
Well, same with Josh Allen. He was targeting him a ton before this, and now we get the impression there's going to be less targets for Singletary. I guess the one good news with Singletary is he still profiles as the best goal line short yardage back, and he really showed that last year. Tons of touchdowns down the stretch, especially. This year, though, the Bills running off – actually, the Bills near the goal line have been really inefficient scoring touchdowns. Mm. But certainly the bigger case running-wise, I think they have one or two touchdowns rushing inside the five this year. And that's – they might both be Josh Allen, honestly. I don't even know if they're both Singletary. I'll pull up the goal line guide in a sec. But it's been – they have not had good goal line grades because they have their offense – yeah, they have one rushing touchdown inside the five this year.
Wow.
As opposed to last year where they had – can I pull up last year's? I think it's something like 8 or 9. Gotcha. Like it was a lot more. And I mean, yeah, there's still a ways to go in the season, but one through up to this point, 14% is, well, it's not the worst because the Seahawks have zero. They still haven't scored a goal line touchdown yet rushing. So it's not the worst in the league, but among the teams that have actually scored a rushing touchdown, which I guess the Seahawks are the only one that haven't, it's, yeah, the Bills are the second lowest percentage of goal line rushing touchdowns. So that's not even Hines. That's just the offense is what's hurting Singletary. Yeah. So yeah, like I said, I don't think there's too much of an effect on Singletary because I still think he's probably their lead back. If I had to guess, Hines is just there to replace James Cook for now, temporarily replace or augment what they wanted Zach Moss to do. So
right.
I still think Singletary's startable this week, and I still think I'm going to go forward, but again, watch and see how things change. For the Colts, I mean, I love Deion Jackson, so I don't know if I'm biased, but I still think I think he's the backup, not Zach Moss. I think he's got to learn this system and come in, and if he can prove that he's better than Deion Jackson, he'll get that eventually. But for right now, I view Jackson as the main backup to Taylor, and I think Taylor's questionable this week, so Deion Jackson might be in lineups this week, especially coming in a ton of leagues. So,
Yeah, Jackson has definitely showed out this year. He's definitely taken a huge step forward, getting the opportunity, doing the most with his opportunities as well. I mean, you got to look at, I mean, the Colts are still in a division that is certainly winnable. And Moss going there, I mean, he's going to have to battle for that to try and get that second spot. But yeah, I do not think he immediately goes into it. I put him behind Jackson as well.
Yeah. All right. So then we'll move on to the next couple of trades here that involve the Miami Dolphins and running backs. So, I want to start with the simpler one. I think this actually chronologically happened after once they traded away a certain running back, like, oh, we need to fill the depth. So they went out and they sent a 5th round pick to Mike McDaniel's old buddy, Kyle Shanahan of the San Francisco 49ers. And they now pair Raheem Mostert with Jeff Wilson, just like the 49ers did. Clearly, you're coming from that system. He trusted these backs to run the system that he wanted. So he knows they know the system. So like to me, because Wilson is going to basically the same offensive system, I'd imagine he comes in as, I mean, it's a 5th round pick. So they didn't necessarily give up much, but because I guess the other move we'll get to in a sec is the Dolphins traded away Chase Edmonds, which that's like you look at what they got that trade. He seemed more like a throw in that trade, not the main focus, whereas this really was just Wilson for a 5th. Like this is they wanted Wilson, him and Mostert. I'd imagine Mostert's still the starter because he's been there. Mm-hmm. But and I guess even when they were together with the 49ers, they were both healthy. Usually Mostert was the guy that extra gear with the speed, I think. So I'd imagine he's still the starter. But to me, Wilson comes in as the main backup. He's going to be right ahead of Miles Gaskin, who I love. But I have to admit that clearly the Dolphins don't because he's been a healthy scratch most of the year. And then Salvin Ahmed, who has been active for a lot of games, but really hasn't gotten touches. It's been more special teams. So I think Wilson's the main backup with Miami here, right?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Wilson comes in. Certainly has proven he's been able to shoulder a load this season with the Elijah Mitchell injury and what he did in San Francisco. Yeah, I think he certainly comes in as that number two role. Could get some action around the goal line. Pretty tough runner in between the tackles. But like you said, does lack that burst that Mostert has. But if you're looking to grind out a few yards and give Mostert a blow, I mean, you can do worse than Wilson, for sure.
And then from the 49ers' perspective, Wilson was the main backup behind Christian McCaffrey. Maybe this says, okay, we want to give McCaffrey like 99% of the touches and play 100% of the snaps. Like, we're going to do that. We're going to ride him because we want to win games to get in the playoffs. I kind of think that's part of it, but also maybe the, you know, who is the backup running back right now? Is it Tyrion Davis Price? Is it Jordan Mason? Could they call up Tevin Coleman off? It's either he's on there or the Jets practice squad. I can't remember, but maybe he gets poached there or called up. So maybe Coleman comes in and is ahead of those guys, especially if they're trying to win games. But this almost seems to me like, okay, they're just going to go full in on McCaffrey the rest of the season, right?
Agreed. Definitely.
Okay, so unless you want to focus on the 49ers, we can continue to talk about the Dolphins. So the Chase, it's not really the Chase Edmonds trade. So they gave up a big package, the Dolphins did. Their 2023 first, a 2024 fourth, and Chase Edmonds. In response, they got Bradley Chubb, a linebacker, and then a 2025 fifth. But this was, you know, adding to the defense. And if it cost Edmonds as a throw-in piece, so be it, because they really haven't been using him much. And then, again, like, I think the timing was they made this trade, and then after they went and made the Wilson trade, thinking, okay, we're willing to now give up. I mean, we just got an extra fifth, and yeah, it's 2 years down the line, but we can kind of know that we banked a fifth on the back end. We can use a fifth to trade for Wilson. So Chase Edmonds goes to the Broncos. I guess, what does this do for the Broncos and that running back group?
Just adds confusion. I mean, I'm confused. I don't know. I don't know what to think. I mean, Gordon should be the guy. He's not. He's certainly not snatching it from anybody right now. I mean, Edmonds, of course, is known more as the pass catcher. Doesn't really, pound the ball in the end zone like a lot of the running backs are. Or what we thought might happen in Miami. But yeah, I mean, I think it just adds more confusion. I mean, I think one of those guys is not going to be there next year when Javonte comes back. I mean, hopefully, you know, comes back healthy and all that good stuff. But yeah, I don't know. Well, what are your thoughts there?
Man, I'm just as confused as you. Honestly, Chase Edmonds has confused me this year because the Dolphins, I feel like, haven't been using him properly. Man, I don't know, Mike McDaniel, man. If Cliff Kingsbury clearly shows you something and like this clearly works and it's Cliff Kingsbury right. doing it and it's smart and intelligent and you can't figure it out, that's I don't know. But because with the Cardinals, it was they never ran him goal line. He was not a short yardage back. He was just a pass catching back. They target him a lot in the red zone. But, you know, through his career, had very few carries inside the five. And it seems like with the Dolphins, they were almost doing the opposite. They weren't throwing them the football and they were giving him short yardage carries. So that was strange in terms of how the Dolphins would use him. I'd imagine the Broncos can, well, it's Nathaniel Hackett. I don't, you see, I would imagine you'd think you should have more faith in Mike McDaniel than Cliff Kingsbury and Nathaniel Hackett, but now I don't know. So yeah, I'm just as confused about everything with Chase Edmonds this year. But so if we think logically what should be the case, he should be the pass catching back there, which almost means if Murray and Gordon are splitting the short yardage roles, like either of them could get the touchdown, kind of like we saw with Javonte and Melvin last couple of years with Denver, like both get goal line carries inside the five. They could both score a touchdown, but like it'd be frustrating because you never know which one's going to get it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I completely forgot about Murray. So yeah.
And that's the thing. I still think Latavius Murray is the best back here. Like I've been kind of ranking him higher than Gordon the last couple of weeks. And he's kind of just been doing it because he's getting touchdowns. Sure. So I still think, and if Murray's the guy that they brought in over Gordon and giving him the short yardage duties, I still kind of view him as the best upside of this backfield because of the touchdown upside. Now, if he and Gordon are just going to split that and they give all the pass catches, all the third down work, all the targets to Edmonds, then he probably does emerge as the one that's better. Certainly a higher floor. Maybe there's not as much touchdown upside with him, but we'll have to see if Denver uses him that way. Because I think, Brad, we think that's how he should be used, but just because something should happen doesn't mean it will. So I agree with you. This is, they're on bye this week, so it's not like you'd be able to play Edmonds anyway. But yeah, I wouldn't, if they weren't, even going into week 10, I'm not sure I want to play Edmonds. I want to wait and see. Murray's still probably the guy. I know I've got a team where I'm good at every other position, kind of went with a zero running back approach. David Montgomery is the main running back, so that's not doing great. Your boy Damian Harris, also been injured a lot. So that's one where I've got both Murray and Edmonds and now they're on the same team. So that's next week. That's going to be really difficult to decide who I'm going to start between the two. Yeah. I'd imagine I still go Murray. I want that touchdown upside but we'll see.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you're confused too. Cause I was sitting over here just, and I wasn't even thinking about Murray. So yeah. Wow.
All right. One last trade here, Brad. Your Jacksonville Jaguars gave up a 23 fifth and a 24 second to get Calvin Ridley. Now, obviously, they can't play him this year. Technically, they're not even guaranteed of getting him ever. He has to be reinstated. Now, NFL, like, the NFL knows how they're going to approach it, right? They even though they have to wait to officially announce if he's being reinstated, they know how they think they're going to approach it, probably. They haven't just, okay, we're just going to decide this the day before. So they probably know. And I'm sure the Jaguars, well, if you had Urban Meyer, maybe not. But I think that it's a better run organization now, Brad, for your Jags. I'm sure they called the NFL to say, is there a chance he doesn't get reinstated? And they probably said very minimally. Like, right. There's like a 1% chance of that. Like, we are planning to reinstate him, especially giving up a second. This tells me Ridley is probably playing next year. That's just what I take of it, of this transaction happening. But I don't know. Nothing's guaranteed. Like we just said, to wait and see. But as a Jaguars fan, how do you feel about this trade?
I mean, I'm glad that they were aggressive and tried to get a wide receiver. My feeling on Ridley, and probably a lot of it has to do because I had him on a couple teams last year, and obviously that blew up in my face. Like, leading up to the suspension, it seemed like his mindset wasn't there. I mean, he obviously had the mental health, takeaway. So I'm not sure, you know, how devoted he is. I mean, I guess on paper, they didn't really give up, you know, a ton to get him. I mean, what was it? It was a 24 second. I mean, that could come in handy. Lawrence definitely needs some weapons. I mean, obviously it's not going to happen this year. Christian Kirk has declined the last few weeks. I mean, there were certainly weeks where he looked like the strong number ones, definitely was somebody who was on my radar from a fantasy perspective because he was getting peppered with targets. But I think we're seeing Lawrence regress, the last few weeks, making poor decisions. I'm not sure what, when he's going to get out of that funk. I know they have a bye week next week. Maybe that'll help it. But as far as the future, I mean, Ridley's definitely proven that he can be a number one. My concerns are, where his mindset was before the suspension with the gambling situation. I mean, it just seemed like he wasn't there. You know, he didn't want to be there. Maybe it was just because he didn't want to be in Atlanta. Maybe his buddy Julio left and he was sad. Didn't have the wherewithal to, you know, really get out there and play. But obviously, I mean, he spoke about, some of his mental health issues as well. So I'm a little iffy with it. Like part of me, like I said, is happy that Jaguars actually made a move, that they were buyers for the first time in a while. I mean, I know seemed like there were a lot of other players that were possibly on the block down here in Duval, but it's going to be interesting to see how it works out. But I think you made a great point. I'm sure they made a call to the NFL to try and kind of see where the situation was going to be for Ridley next season, and made the call there. And I still don't think this takes them off the hook of trying to get a receiver early in, possibly through free agency or through the draft next year. But if Ridley can come back and be that number one that he was for a couple of years in Atlanta, I mean, that's certainly something that would benefit Lawrence and the Jaguars offense overall.
Well, yeah, and I think the point of it being a 24 second is they're kind of banking on him coming back next year, doing well, to make that 24 pick later.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't think they want to give their 23 second. Like, well, we're not giving up a pick this next year for a guy that's not going to play for us and not going to help us increase that pick to where right now it's looking like it's a fairly early pick. Maybe not the 33rd overall pick, like their second round pick would have been the last 2 years, unfortunately. But it's kind of what the Claypool price is, right? A little eye opening on a little surprising that they were able to get that at this point, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I think the one thing with Ridley, and actually ties back to that Bear situation, I think this helps Christian Kirk. Obviously not this year, but in the long run, another target to draw away coverage. Mm-hmm. I think if you, you know, you have Ridley on the outside, that opens Kirk up in the slot a lot more. And I think maybe, you know, you can move them around. You could put Ridley in the slot and have Kirk on the outside. It seems like that's kind of the advantage of having Kirk, is that he can play everywhere. But it seems like he's also done a lot of great work in his career through the slot.
Yeah.
Now, as a rookie, he was on the outside with Larry Fitzgerald in the slot. And then Fitzgerald got hurt that year. He had to move into the slot, and he was kind of showing, okay, I can be that number one guy. Didn't really show much last couple of years. And then until his last year at Arizona, contract year, he really kind of showed things. Hopkins hurt, injured for a bunch of that season.
Right.
And so I think I kind of like buying Kirk, although I don't know that there's necessarily a need to buy him now. I think I already bought him in the league a couple of weeks ago for a second. I wouldn't pay any more than that now, or even next year. But I think he's someone I'd be okay going out to buy for a second. Yeah. Wouldn't mind also selling him for a second. I think that, like, that's, you know, the transaction price for those receivers on teams you need to sell them. Because I think, yeah, this, I think Ridley will help Lawrence, obviously, but I think it does also help Kirk in the long term, in my opinion.
I gotcha. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're not going to be able to re-sign Marvin Jones next year. So, I mean, so you're looking at, you know, Zay Jones, Ridley, and Kirk, and then possibly, you know, bring somebody in, like I said, through the draft or you know, another free agent. So, you know, I mean, no, I think that's a great point that, you know, you, from a dynasty perspective, it could help Kirk out. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's down here. It's a little bit of a mixed reviews with how everything. So that's pretty much my take on it. But at the same time, I'm just happy to see them actually try. So we'll see how it goes.
All right. So normally we talk rankings on the show, but yeah, the trade deadline talk, we felt it was appropriate enough to kind of go through each of these trades. Absolutely. Again, there's tons of other trades for defensive players and things like that. But we thought this was, how did these offensive skill players being traded affect their offenses they're going to and the offenses they're leaving. So I thought we did a good job of that. And now let's get into the rankings debates. So we're going to keep it quick here. Two players at each position. And we're actually going to start with some verses. So it's funny enough that at quarterback and tight end, our differences were close enough and where the players are ranked were interesting enough to make verses out of both of them. So we'll start with the tight ends. The verses here, the theme is, you know, one of us has a top 12, and in your case, actually a top 5 tight end, where the other one has outside the top 12. So you're representing the Tyler Higbee side. I'm representing Mike Gesicki. So you have Tyler Higbee at tight end 5. I have him at 14. For Gesicki, I've got him at tight end 8, while you held him down at tight end 17. So 9 spot difference for both. So I guess it's funny. Maybe I need to explain why I'm so low on Higbee, because I've kind of talked him up a lot this year, but you know, the injuries, like he got hurt last week. Not really sure. Obviously put up a poor performance. So not really sure what that's going to look like going forward and what is going to be this week. I mean, same with Cooper Kupp's hurt too. So a lot of question marks with this Rams offense. And I think it might, because here's the thing. I think if Cooper Kupp's out, I don't think that helps Higbee at all. I think that just makes that offense so much less efficient that it takes away touchdown upside, even though he might get more targets when we've seen Higbee in certain games, like week one, like certainly the early stretch of the season, get a ton of targets. But I want to look for other options. That's why he's outside my top 12 this week. I think there are other players I'd rather start over him, and obviously 13 of them. So the targets early season to me affect me less now when what's happening right now. And right now he's hurt. Was it a neck injury? Seems like, was it just a stinger? Not really sure. The Rams aren't necessarily being clear, which is kind of hurting it for me. So maybe some clarity might make me raise him into the top 12, but for now he's my tight end 14. You seem not afraid, though. You've got Tyler Higbee at tight end 5. So what's up with that?
No, I mean, I am concerned with the injuries for sure. I like the matchup going against that Bucs secondary, which seems to be struggling. I mean, and I feel like, I mean, I can certainly understand your feelings with, you know, Kupp possibly not playing. That doesn't affect Higbee. I see that, you know, he's had a bad couple weeks, had a bye week, obviously dealing with the injuries, but I think the targets are going to be there again against a Buccaneers secondary, which has not been producing at all this season. I liked what I saw from the Ravens tight ends, even though Andrews went out a little bit I guess Thursday night, but Isaiah Likely had some nice catches. It seemed like he was running open. So I guess I'm just kind of banking on that the Bucs secondary, even with the, I guess the extended week, because they played on Thursday, I'm just banking that they still don't have it figured out, and Stafford's going to be able to get back to Pepper and Higbee to make some things happen.
I guess the other fear I have there, that's a good point you brought up the matchup. The Bucs pass rush scares me for like a good pass rush scares me for tight ends, because how often will they be asked to block instead of run routes? And that's the other thing that scares me a little bit here. So,
yeah. Yeah. Hindsight, I might have them a little tough, but I'll stick with it. I'm good.
Well, and I'll be honest, like I was almost surprised when I was doing my rankings and I ended up with Mike Gesicki at 8. And to me, it's funny. You talk about being concerned with Higbee, yet you're putting him at 5. And that kind of speaks more about the rest of the tight ends than it does Higbee, doesn't it? And Gesicki, like I was surprised too, because he's really just touchdown dependent, but I find that already at tight end 8, we're getting into touchdown dependent anyway.
Yeah,
I like the upside. They've got a decent goal line grade, 77, I think it was. I closed it. Anyways, their passing grade higher than their rushing grade, and it was among the higher ones. The Bears have traditionally also been, when they've been a good defense, the one spot you could always exploit was the tight end too. So now this offense is really just a different offense than in general with the speed of Waddle and Hill. It kind of makes other teams defend differently. So maybe the tight end isn't the way to exploit it, but I'm also really high. Like I have 2 at tight end 5 this week. So I'm just all in on the Dolphins passing game in general. And I think Gesicki gets a raise from that in general, but you've got him out all the way outside of your top 15 at number 17. So is it the Dolphins offense, or is it just because those other weapons, you don't think there's much for Gesicki?
Yeah. I feel it's the other weapons. I have a Waddle and, I mean, I think I have Hill at number 1. I'm pretty sure Waddle's in my top 10. If not, he's very close or should be. I feel like they're going to be able to get open at will against the Bears. I think it's just the past episodes, how you talked about Gesicki and that he is so tight independent. But yeah, I mean, yeah, that you're right. I mean, when you get into 8, 9, 10, I mean, it's going to be, that's what you're looking for in your tight ends is a touchdown dependency. But I just feel that the Dolphins offense is going to go through a Hill and Waddle this week.
Well, and I think it's interesting. Yeah, we both have Waddle in the top 10. Looking at the Fantasy Pros expert consensus rankings for half point PPR, Hill is the number 1 receiver this week, although neither of us have him at number 1. And that's interesting because we both have the same number 1 at 3 of the 4 positions, but not wide receiver. And we're not, and neither of us match the consensus guy either. So we both had Josh Allen 1 at QB. We both have Austin Eckler as the number 1 running back. We both have Travis Kelce as the number 1 tight end. I've got Stephon Diggs to match with Allen, that stack there against the Jets as the number 1 wide receiver. Yeah. You've got Justin Jefferson though. I think you have Diggs at 6 and I have Jefferson at 5. So it's the top 5-6 at wide receiver this week. Like even AJ Brown, you've got at number 3. I've got DeAndre Hopkins at 2, like some really weird names even in the top 5. So tough week at the top for wide receiver, but we will get to our other verses. So quarterback versus. Not major differences, but the biggest difference this week is Tom Brady. You've got him at QB 11. I've got him at QB 18. So this is the same thing as the tight end. One of us has one of us is representing a top 12 QB that the other one has outside the top 15, even. I think yours falls in consensus. Mine doesn't. I've got Taylor Heinicke at QB 10. You've got him at QB 16. The consensus ranking is QB 19. I love Heinicke this week for the matchup against the Vikings. Great. Their goal line grade defensively is awful. Like they're allowing tons of touchdowns, right, whether it's on the ground or through the air. Trying to get a rushing touchdown last week, maybe something he could replicate. But I think, you know, the connection with McLaurin's growing. I think he's played well enough to be like for the team to say that you're going to be the starter the rest of the year, unless they want to go to Sam Howell. But I don't think he's getting benched for Carson Wentz. So I'm all in on Heinicke this week. Like I said, top 10 option for me at quarterback. Okay. I'd rather play him than Tom Brady. Clearly, now you wouldn't. So I guess the argument with Brady, we talked about the Rams side of the matchup. What do you think about the Bucs side of this matchup?
I think Brady still has those weapons. I mean, I think the extra time this week, you know, to hopefully, right the ship. I mean, Brady certainly did not look well Thursday night, obviously struggled with accuracy, which is something you haven't really, you haven't really had to stay the last 20 plus years when you talk about Tom Brady. I mean, a lot of short hops, a lot of overthrows, a lot of passes behind. I just feel like they're going to be able to right the ship. I think Jalen Ramsey is a little bit overrated on the outside as a corner. And that's not just my Duval hate from a few years ago. I think that he can be exploited. I mean, we saw that in the Super, you know, dating back to the Super Bowl. So I like the Bucks' opportunity at home. I like their team they have. It looks like Godwin is certainly getting his stride going. Gonna receive more targets and I like Brady and I think you made a great point about Heineke. I hope you're right. I had to pick him up to play instead of Dak this week, so I certainly hope you're right there. I just he makes me a little nervous as far as some of his decision making goes. So I can't ever really just put the pedal to the metal when it comes to kind of shooting him up the board. But I can certainly see like you mentioned. Going against the Vikings defense that is suspect around the goal line, has been known to, certainly give up some points, but they are 6-1 for a reason. Washington playing at home. Yeah, I mean, you said I had him at 18.
You have him at 16.
Oh, that's not too bad. Okay.
Yeah, we're both higher than consensus. Like I said, the consensus was 19, which I thought was pretty low. I mean, he's done well the last two games as a starter. He's put up 18 and 19 fantasy points. Like he's giving you a really great floor, maybe not a huge ceiling, but this matchup against the Vikings might force the ceiling out of him. We'd imagine the Vikings are going to score tons of points. They'll need to pass a lot to keep up, I guess. And that's where with Brady, I don't have so much faith in the Rams offense. Talked about it earlier, the confusion there, but I also, you brought up, okay, like the lack of accuracy with Brady, the offensive line, I think could be,
sure,
it's a great pass rush for the Rams. So that the offensive line, I've got worries about Chris Godwin. And that leads us to our biggest difference this week is Chris Godwin. In fact, you've got him at wide receiver 12. And maybe I'm really wrong on this. I know the consensus is kind of close to you. I've got him down at wide receiver 27. And so 15 spots difference is our biggest difference this week. So we'll put out a poll for anyone on Twitter at FPC_fantasypod to vote on. Do you agree with Brad at Godwin is a top 12 guy, or with me as in the wide receiver 3 range? So I guess my just quick argument there is just the Bucks offense scares me. So as a consequence of Brady being so low, Godwin to me is also low. And I've got Mike Evans still really high. Godwin, again, recovering from the ACL, dealing with other injuries, back, knee, he's missed. There's the hamstring injury as well. So I need to kind of see Godwin kind of put it together a few games in a row. So I'm kind of punishing him this week again, tough matchup against the Rams. Maybe that's the wrong way to go about it. Maybe because of the offensive line woes, maybe they dump down to Godwin a lot, but for now I'd be super low on Godwin. So obviously that's not the case for you.
Yeah. I mean, like I mentioned before, I like the targets that he's getting. Certainly was busy against the Ravens. I mean, he had 11 targets, but granted, only caught like 6 or 7 of those. Still, not necessarily getting in the end zone. I just feel like he's able to get open against the Rams secondary. I mean, as you mentioned, there is certainly concern about the pass rush from the Rams to cause some issues. So, I mean, I just think he's going to be a major factor in this pivotal game for both these teams, but most definitely the Bucks.
So anyway, so again, we've given our thoughts. You can share your thoughts as well on Twitter at FPC_fantasypod. We'll put out this episode, we'll put a poll for Chris Godwin, wide receiver 12 or wide receiver 27. Also follow your co-host Brad's at @TheRundown_BH. I'm at Senra Says. Download the full press coverage app. Follow PA the Second. Let's use the song while it does our intro and outro music. So on Twitter at @PA_IIOfficial. So appreciate all that. Brad, any final thoughts for the listeners before we get out of here?
No, not really. No, it's just been a great chatting again with you, Kyle. And appreciate everybody tuning into us.
Yeah, absolutely. And trade deadline kind of interrupted our regular scheduled programming, but we'll be back to a maybe full rankings debate on the next episode of the Full Press Fantasy Pod.